And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, La Urena, and we are discussing the Dawn of the Dead remake from 2004. Many horror fans, myself included, and I'm sure Urena would throw herself in with this idea that if you had a list of the best horror remakes, and I would say best remakes ever made, Dawn of the Dead would probably be in that group for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure off the top of my head, I can't think of... Oh, excuse me, my pancreas is screaming into the microphone. I can't think of, you know, very many films right off the top when you say a remake. Oh, for sure, this one. This is the one. If you were to say, hey, give me a good, you know, movie remake, I'm thinking that this is going to be the first one that's coming to my head. I might be biased because we're reviewing it right now. But yeah,
the ones I would throw in there in addition to that, and I would have to look over a list, but, the Blob, the 1980s remake, which they're doing a 2025 or whatever, 2025 remaker, supposedly. I don't want to see that.
Yeah,
I don't want to see a woke. I don't want to see the Blob identify itself as a trans person, but
maybe it won't identify as anything. Maybe it'll be, what is the words that they use?
Non-binary.
There you go. No, we don't. Let's not.
Speaking of non-binary, the John Carpenter's The Thing is in that list. Yes. Invasions of the Body Snatchers from 1970, I think, 8, whenever that came out, the one with Donald Sutherland, is way better than the 50s version.
Oh, and you know, of course, what?
And The Fly, the Cronenberg's version of The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Okay, so I have not seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but considering that I liked I Am Legend very much, that would be one of them for me.
There you go. I mean, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
CGI, as we discussed, ruined it, but otherwise it was a pretty good remake.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dawn of the Dead is definitely, I would probably say, I don't know, some of those others I would rate higher. It would be my top five for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Top five remake.
This is in the top three for me. it's really up there.
Yeah, but I don't think we've made you watch The Thing yet. So, I mean, that's...
I've watched the original and the new one, so...
Have you? Okay.
Okay, so top three as well. Again, I'm not saying which, though.
the tagline first is, "When the undead rise, civilization will fall."
That's really good, considering we had, "When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth." This is very true. If the undead rise, civilization 100% will fall.
I chose that one because they did repeat, you know, "When there's no more room in hell." But, like, I figure that's really Dawn of the Dead 78's, you know, motto. Let's pick one that's, you know, fits this movie a little better. And this one definitely fits this one.
Yeah.
Directed by Zack Snyder, written by James Gunn, based upon George A. Romero's original screenplay. James Gunn is an odd character.
He is.
We will be covering another movie that he made, which is basically a remake of Night of the Creeps. It's called Slither. It will be in this season.
Oh, yeah.
We will actually be putting Night of the Creeps and Slither back to back so we can see how close they really are. But James Gunn's got good horror bona fides. I mean, he started out with Trauma, you know, with Lloyd Kaufman and now that, I mean, and of course he's a good screenwriter and a good director, or a great director. He, I mean, those Guardians of the Galaxy's movies are some of the best that Marvel put out, even that last one that they came out with. I'm worried about his Superman that's going to come out here soon, though. I don't know that his sensibilities fit Superman. Like,
yeah,
you take the dark comedy in this. It's the same sarcastic comedy that's in Guardians.
Yes.
That works. It fits the Suicide Squad to a T. I don't think that fits Superman. But we'll see. We'll see if he can ride outside of his regular.
I hate to say it. I think he can. I just found out some information about James Gunn I'm not very fond of. But we have found there's a lot of movies that we have liked made by people where we're not very fond of their actions. When did James Gunn, didn't he get released from Guardians of the Galaxy and then he got put back on?
Yes.
Okay.
Because he made a series of tweets that were very, like, he wanted to be an edgelord at one point in time. And he made a lot of comments that were they kid-based? There was something really bad about him.
Okay, kid-based sounds about right. I thought they were anti-Semitic.
No, I don't remember him being anti-Semitic, but it was almost like they weren't pedophilic, but they bordered on, like, you know, something of that nature. Like, either we should be killing kids or we should, you know, whatever. And he was being an edgelord, but because of that, it came back to bite him in the ass.
Oh, yes, it did. He's got back. Do we know what time era this was?
It was after this.
Okay.
Like, shortly after this movie, I think, is when he restarted posting all that stuff.
I'm talking about when did he get released from Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, that was like in 20, let's see, the original Guardians was what, 2018?
Okay.
Maybe? And Guardians 2, let's see, that was 2017 was 2017.
Oh, wow.
So it was, it's 2018 or 2019, whenever when they kicked him.
Okay.
From the series.
What he did, and I have to get the timeline again. I think it was around on the time that he got released from Guardians. The tweets probably ain't shit. He had a party that was pedo themed, and
this is all speculation, folks. You know, none of this is proved. But Rains, whatever his name is, that played Dwight Schrute on The Office.
Yes,
he's had a lot of tweets that are very.
They
skew that way too, and good friends with James. So.
Oh Lord, yeah, he had a pedo party where basically all the women had to dress up like little kids and do kid stuff. And the party he threw, or the person he threw it for, recently, as of 2021, got imprisoned for doing some things to a very young, you know, I will say a teenager, but definitely not 17, younger than that. And I was like, ew, what the fuck, dude? No wonder Disney wanted to part ways with him.
Let's see. Here's some of the tweets as reported by The Verge. That whenever he was doing all this stuff. I like it when little boys touch me in the silly place.
Ew, yeah.
Trying to maintain a semi-chub so I'll look impressive in these photos when taking a picture with some, like, it actually had something about pizza or something, which Pizzagate's a whole thing.
Pizzagate,
conspiracies about it. Three men and a baby they had sex with. Hashtag unromantic movies. Honesty's the best policy. Tell your 3-year-old you're laughing, thinking of me fucking 3PO. He'll appreciate it when older. Like, it's a lot of shit like this. Like, just, like, I mean, something about a 3-year-old was peeing on my head, like weird shit. Like, I mean, I don't know. I want to give him benefit of the doubt because, I mean, he's been married to, you know, several hot women and married one right now that's in most of his stuff. And there's some arguments about whether or not she's a good enough actor. She's decent, but whether or not she should be stealing roles from other people just because she's, you know, married to the director. But that's not a good look at all.
Yeah,
it's not.
No, not even. So yeah, I just wanted to, while we're talking about him, I saw he was in this movie and I was like, not in this movie, but part of the movie. And I was like, oh God.
He also caused some controversy here recently because some doctored photos came out about his Superman costume. And he, it has the classic like look, you know, where Superman's got the undies on the outside of the suit and all that. And James Gunn came out and basically said, "Are you all fucking idiots? This looks retarded. I wouldn't, you know, do this." And the way that he said it and the way that he was very, you know, just very combative about it, very aggressive, it put a lot of people off. So he's a very, you know, a polarizing person.
Yeah.
Is how I'll phrase that. Anyways, music's by Tyler Bates, made with a budget of $28 million. It made $102 million. So this movie,
it recovered a little bit of money.
Out of the park, yes.
Just a little bit. It did okay.
This is skipping in the trivia a bit, but they almost didn't make this movie. And they actually cut the budget down to $28 million from whatever it was before, which is probably a good thing because you know how we've always talked about how the more the budget is, doesn't make necessarily a better movie. Cough, cough, Marvel. Just take a look at the $200 million budgets they've had for those movies, and they're all shit.
Yeah.
But they were originally going to have more of a budget, but Universal had just released House of the Dead. That movie was dog shit. It didn't make any money at the theater. It actually lost some money, and they were like, hold up, you're making another zombie movie. Apparently those are not any good, so or at least not in popular opinion, so we're going to cut your budget. And then this came out and blew it out of the water. And actually, I think it was the success of this movie that allowed them to green light Land of the Dead for George.
Okay. So
George actually benefited all the way around from this movie coming out. So anybody who's like, this isn't the movie George was laughing his way to the bank because he got to make a movie he wanted to make for years.
Yeah.
And they had to have gave him some of the money off this. I don't know how they would have done otherwise because he still had the copyright from, you know, the original Dawn.
And that's excuse me, as I'm choking. That's what I wanted to know is, did Romero get a little cut? Hopefully he did. But $28 million, just briefly, you had good actors. I hate to spoil anything. The location looked pristine.
Yes.
You had a lot of aerial footage. That ain't cheap. Legit aerial footage. And the zombies looked amazing.
The makeup effects in this are, I mean, and the CG, and here's something that can't be stressed enough. I don't remember the year that I Am Legend came out. They both had access to pretty much the same type of CGI level of technology. The CGI in this movie is fucking amazing, even to this day. Because you don't, they had just enough well-made zombies in the forefront to offset any bad ones that were doing, you know, the EDM dance club shit in the background.
And I don't think it was EDM, or I don't think it was CGI. I was about to say CGM. I don't think it was a continuous glucose monitor, everybody. I don't think it was CGI.
Sugar going low. Warning, sugar going low.
I think it was actual people in that scene because it was a lot of them, but it wasn't like hundreds and hundreds. It was 50-ish. I'll have to send you a scene if I can.
That scene, though, when they're in the trucks trying to make their way out of the mall toward the end of the movie, and they are surrounded by zombies, it is still effective.
Yes.
It really looks like they are just ungodly hordes.
100%. If you want to be embarrassed a little bit, maybe a little bit ashamed, Dawn of the Dead, this one, was made in 2004, which we know, we just said that, and I Am Legend was 2007, and we're talking about the same CGI.
Yeah, and they made such and the budget, I think, was quite a bit higher than this one too. So they didn't even use that to their advantage.
Nope. I Am Legend had a budget of what, $150 million?
Yeah, it was quite a bit more than this.
Yes, exactly. So that is a little embarrassing.
The other thing that has to be stated about this movie is that it's funny that Universal would cut their budget saying the zombies wasn't a thing, because look at the movies that came out around 2004. This movie was in response to 28 Days Later. That's where Snyder got the idea that he wanted fast-running zombies from.
Okay.
Shaun of the Dead came out in 2004. I mean, so it was another big zombie. I mean, even... I don't know what the budget versus box office for, and I'm interested to see once we, because we are covering it, obviously. But that movie has gone on to a huge acclaim, also made by, I'm pretty sure it was made by Universal, or produced by them at least. Okay. And then you had, there was Land of the Dead came out shortly after this. There was a zombie resurgence around this time.
They were coming back to life.
Yeah, like there was a big time thing. I mean, there were several big zombies. So the fact that they were like, we don't know if this zombie thing's going to, no, it came back big time. And I want to say The Walking Dead came out around this time too, like, or shortly within the span.
I want to say, hold on. The Walking Dead, let me see if Google will give me anything. 2010. So just, a little bit, 6 years after this one. But how did Shaun come out the same year as Dawn?
They were just in production at the same time. It's the weirdest thing, so.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Shaun was, okay, so Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, they had all worked together on a very good British sitcom called Spaced.
Yeah.
In one of the episodes of that sitcom, there is an episode where Simon Pegg's character is, all he does all day is play a game called Time Splitters, and he's having these dreams where he's getting attacked by zombies. That prompted him and Nick Frost and Edgar Wright to sit down and say, hey, why don't we make an actual zombie movie just like Romero did?
Okay.
And so that Spaced was from the late 90s. So Shaun had been cooking for a while before it ever actually happened.
Okay. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's funny because we have a Shaun of the Dead and a Dawn of the Dead. I mean, they just sound like each other, but that's insane. You have this impressive, zombie movie that comes out, and you have a zomcom. That comes out immediately.
Whatever we decided that was for Life After Beth.
Rom-com, zom-com, I don't know.
Rom-drom, zom-com, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because there is drama in Shaun. It's not just the romantic comedy. I mean, it does have, the scenes, I don't know, I'm tangent here, but the scenes where he's like having to deal with the fact that his mom's going to have to be put down.
Yeah.
They acted the shit out of that, but we'll get to that movie when it happens. principal players in this one, Sarah Polley playing Anna, the former nurse, widow, and survivor. She is the end result of all Romero's, like, eventual female protagonists. Like, she, she has a vulnerability at times, but she definitely stands up for herself and even threatens characters in this movie that she probably shouldn't threaten, but she does it anyways. She was in the John Adams TV miniseries, Mr. Nobody, Go, Beowulf and Grendel, and Extasins.
Wow.
Bing Rames plays Kenneth, the former cop and the badass. He was in Bringing Out the Dead with Nicolas Cage. Con Air with Nicolas Cage, Pulp Fiction, Mission Impossible series, a TV movie called Zombie Apocalypse. Imagine that. Striptease. God, that movie is awful.
I love that movie. Don't you ever.
It's funny. It's funny, but it's like, well, I'll give it this. If you compare it, because in my mind,
Striptease. Is that the one with Elizabeth Banks?
Demi Moore.
Demi Moore. Okay, Demi Moore is fine. Yeah, the other one with Elizabeth.
This was fine. The same thing you were just doing. This and Showgirls, in my mind, are intertwined. And Showgirls is definitely the worst of the two.
Thank you. Showgirls is worse. You give Striptease a higher ranking on the poll, okay?
Demi Moore did look hot in that movie, too. I'll give her
credit. Gorgeous. And I loved, who was it, Burt Reynolds? With his fucking Vaseline in his boots? Ugh.
he's got that Vaseline, and he says it's all squishy. Oh my god,
you can hear it.
Death Race 2, Evil Angel, Day of the Dead from 2008. That movie's so bad, especially if you like the original. That is not a good remake.
I'm trying to think if I've seen it.
And then Jacob's Ladder, which Jacob's Ladder is a mind fuck. If anybody's never seen that movie, even if you know what the ending is or what the movie's about, I highly recommend you go back and you watch Jacob's Ladder. That movie is fucking amazing.
Yeah, you've definitely told me, and I need to, and I think my hubby has seen it, so Day of the Dead. God, it looks horrible. Day of the Dead.
Even the effects in that movie are awful.
Is that Nick Cannon?
Yes, he is in that.
The DVD poster is horrible. It looks like they with the cast of characters they had. It looks like they tried to mimic Dawn of the Dead almost exactly. Like Mena Suvari looks like she would be Sarah Pauly, which her name's Sarah in the movie. Obviously, Ving plays himself.
Yeah, Sarah is actually the name of the protagonist from the original Dawn or Day. So they actually they just copied that name. But
yeah, anyways.
Jake Weber plays Michael, who is a Best Buy worker turned hero. I totally forgot that he was just the Best Buy like TV salesman until I rewatched this. Because throughout the movie, he's got like this natural like leader quality about him. And then like when they ask him, he's like, "What the fuck did you do that you think you should be the leader?" And he's like, "I sold TVs at Best Buy." And it's like, "Oh my God."
Yeah. And I wouldn't even say leader. He had a calming effect. He had a very, I almost thought for a minute until I forgot that he was a TV salesman. I was like, God, was this guy like a psychologist or some kind of counselor? Because he was very good at talking to that, the security guard. And he was like, okay, CJ, yeah, your name's CJ. Okay, you know, we need to be doing this on the roof. And have you thought about, you know, reinforcing such and such? Like, he was very calm, collected. He had a plan. But he made it seem like CJ was the one that was going to be the one to make this happen. So, which is a very psychological thing to do.
It is, but that's also good leaders know how to work the person that they're talking to.
That's
so
true. He's also a salesman.
Well, maybe that goes with the salesman part, like you were saying. It's funny that you said about Jake Weber, because everything that I've ever seen him in, he plays that type of character, the calm, like calming type person. Because I know him from American Gothic, because I love that fucking TV show. It was, I always blank because Gary Coleman, I think, is his name. The one who was Ricky Bobby's dad or whatever.
Oh, shit, I love him. Hold on, I'm pulling it up right now, and it's, why, he didn't come up at all. Oh, shit, apparently the 1988 one was the one that came up.
You probably have to look up TV series. The kid who ends up being in Tokyo Drift is the main character, is the main actor in the movie or the TV show. It's a really cool show. It's set in the South. Like it's basically, it's setting up the apocalypse because, the young kid's named Caleb is basically the son of the devil, which is, his name's Gary Coleman. I think it is, but whatever it is,
Gary Cole.
There you go. Gary Cole is like the devil basically, but he's also like this police officer in this like Southern town. And Caleb is like his son, bastard son, by the way. And he's trying to take Caleb and trying to, win him away from the side of good, because he's the Antichrist is what he is.
Oh, shit.
And I say all this because Jake Weber plays a very nice and very calming, doctor in the show, and he's like one of the good people who's trying to steer Caleb to the good side. Like he's always trying to protect Caleb, and every time I see Jake Weber, he plays that type of character. There's nothing bad about that. It's just he plays that character very well, like that specific role. Very good TV show though, especially for its time. The only thing is it never really got a good ending because it was one of those shows they were like, well, you're going to get canceled next season. And they had like they had been working on like this big long like story for so long. And it was just like, okay, well, we got to wrap it up now, you know? And then it just kind of went away. He was also in Meet Joe Black, Medium, which is a TV show. And there's a scene, if you look up on the internet, with him in bed with Elvira.
Not just Cassandra
Peterson, but she's dressed up as Elvira, and he's, like, laying beside of her. And it's like she's, like, freaking out. It's like, who the fuck did I just sleep with last night, you know? He was in The Pelican Brief, What Josiah Saw, The Cell, and The Haunting of Molly Hartley, and Wendigo, amongst other things. Mekhi Phifer plays Andre in this movie, who's assumed former gangbanger or some kind of thief, at least.
Some kind of thug.
He's an almost father. And I wanted to ask your opinion on this. Do you think he's a bad boyfriend? Because I get the vibes that he's almost like verbally and mentally abusive to his girlfriend, Luda.
He's definitely very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? He's kind of like, he's definitely alpha. Like, he's firm on what he wants. Because, like, she's like, I want to give my child, you know, a name.
A Russian name.
Yeah. And he's, I did not know she was Russian. I thought she was almost Middle Eastern. He's like, no, it's going to be African-American, you know. And he said it friendly, but also in a way of, I'm not playing. This baby's name's going to be African-American.
Yeah, he said it in a way that's like, I love you, but there is no debate on this. This one, there's no chance of you getting your way.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's times where she gives him looks in the movie, and I don't know if it's just because where she's Russian and it, like, and she's not really, like, her English is not that well, and it comes off that way, but she almost gives, like, this vibe. It's like of the, of like an abused wife or something who's very demurred around her husband, you know, just because she knows if she isn't, she's going to get beat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it's meant to come across that way. It's just the way it seems in the movie, at least to me.
She's very, oh, God, I'm just not, the words are not coming to me. She's just very, like, to herself. She keeps to herself. She's very quiet, reserved. And I don't know if that's just a natural thing for her because of her being Russian. Most Russian women I know, they're like fucking, they're like, you know, icy Latinas, you know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're Russian, you do what we say, you know, that sort of
thing. They're winter Latinas, so, like, they have their own, they're so cold it burns, you know?
There's this one TikTok, speaking of that, that's this Russian lady, and she does, like, the American woman versus the Russian woman.
Oh, yeah,
woman,
that's her.
And it's, and she's, like, American woman. It's like, you know, I think we're going to go out and we're going to get, you know, some samosas or, you know, mimosas or whatever. And, like, it goes to the Russian woman. It's like, we drink vodka, then we go get fucked up or whatever. You know, it's like the complete opposite of what American women are like. So,
yeah. And that's the woman. That's where I got the winter Latina from. That's, you know.
Mekhi Phifer was, I mean, he was in 130-some episodes of ER, so the man did put in work on ER of all TV shows. He was also in the movie Honey, 8 Mile, the 2000 movie Shaft with Sam L. That's actually a pretty decent action movie still. And of course, we've already covered a movie that Mekhi Phifer was in called I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, my God, yes.
I don't think Mekhi Phifer is really that great of an actor. He's okay. Between this movie, he's probably my least favorite actor in this movie outside of the randos they bring in halfway through. Like, of the main cast that you're with through most of the movie, he's probably my least favorite. Just because there's not a lot I get from his character. Like, he doesn't stand out like Kenneth does, you know?
He does not look the same anymore. I'm trying to think.
He's really, like, gaining a lot of weight in his face, I think, right? If I remember seeing the pictures, yeah.
Definitely. I'm trying to see. Oh, Soul Food was the one I saw him in that I did like him in that one. But other than that, you are right. Every other film, I can't really, you know, I can't really be he's amazing.
He's not bad. It's just like, okay, so Jake Weber, Anna Paule, Ving Rhames, they draw you to the screen every time you see them.
Yeah.
There's another character actor that I'm going to mention here in a little bit. He does that no matter what he's in, but Mekhi Phifer just kind of just, he's there. Like, he's in the background. I mean, you know, Ina Korokina plays Luda, the zombie mother, and, like I said, abused girlfriend. That's for debate. She might just be demurred. I don't know. There's nothing really in the movie that says that they have a bad relationship. It's just they have a weird dynamic. Like, I mean, you know, and the fact that he had her tied up for so long on the bed like that also lends me to think that he was slightly abusive, because it was like, no, you're sick, but nobody's going to get in here to discover that you're sick. So it's an abusive kind of
situation. Very dominant. She was very sub, you know?
Ty Burrell plays Steve. Talk about another person who's got, like, charisma for days, but in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Plays the rich douchebag yacht owner. Of course, he's known primarily for Modern Family.
Which is funny, because I did not know where I knew him from.
The Incredible Hulk. He plays a completely different character in Modern Family. Like, he's not the character Steve at all in that. He was in Muppets Most Wanted, Mr. Peabody and Sherman. He actually does voice Mr. Peabody in that. And then Evolution, which is a weird Ghostbusters-like alien movie that has like Ben Stiller in it. It's an odd movie. Like I think it was even made by Harold Ramis or somebody, or maybe it was not Harold, Ivan Reitman, the guy who did Ghostbusters. It's got a very Ghostbusters feel, but you could tell it's like Walmart brand Ghostbusters, yeah. The Equate brand, you know, it's not, and it's about aliens. It's a weird movie.
If you got Ghostbusters off of Wish.
Yeah, exactly. Michael Kelly plays CJ, who's Paul Blart.
Mall Cop. Mall Cop.
Yeah. he was in Now You See Me, Chronicle, Man on the Moon, Man of Steel, Viral, and Criminal Minds. He probably had the Man of Steel job because he worked with Zack Snyder. He's actually a pretty decent actor. I mean, CJ's an odd character in this movie because you go from hating the guy to he's actually heroic at the end of the movie. Yeah. He's got a good character arc.
I mean, his character arc was always, he always had good intentions. He wasn't wrong. He's like, we're going to let the wrong person in, then I'm going to die. And like, it's true. They did let the wrong people in.
That is true. And he wasn't so mean to them whenever he accepted them. I mean, he was cautious, but he did let them go to the bathroom. Like he was, I mean, there was softness there. So he wasn't completely gone.
He had to figure out, he had to assess the situation. He knew that there was stuff going on downstairs. He even told one of his men, who ends up turning into a, what do they call him? The
flop, a twitcher.
A twitcher. He even told that guy, don't go downstairs. I don't know why they let him go down by himself, but okay, whatever. Regardless, so his intentions were always good. I got to keep this. I'm here at this mall. This is my compound. I have to keep it safe. That's his house. He doesn't have a home anymore.
That is true.
You know, so now these strangers are in, and it's like they're already in. They've not let any other zombies in. Everything's secure, but it's like now I got to assess the situation. Am I going to have them stay? Am I going to he's not going to kill them, you know?
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is they actively torture him at one point in the movie. They send the gay guy, Glenn, or whatever his name is, to sit there and tell stories about how he's attracted to some guy for the first time. And neither one of the guys want to listen to it.
That's
which,
so funny. I love that scene.
For the Alphabet Mafia out there, this was a thing that happened prior back in the day. I mean, so you get mad and want to cancel the movie, but it was a thing.
Yeah.
Actually, the F word's throughout in this movie, which is kind of weird here in the movie, but still. And he's sitting there, and he's just laying there in his cell, and he's just like, please, will you stop? And the guy will not, and he has to cover up his own. So he treats them decently, and they allow torture to happen to him, like mental torture. You know, it's an odd thing, but he does turn around and he becomes actually a pretty good character by the end of the movie.
He's a stand-up person. He kind of always was. You can't just trust anybody.
Linda Booth plays Nicole, who is a daughter and a dog mom.
Yeah.
She's in The Librarians, Kick-Ass 2, Wrong Turn, Cry Wolf, American Psycho 2, All-American Girl, The Skulls 2, Teenage Space Vampires.
Jesus.
Erie, Indiana, The Other Dimension. She actually played a pretty big character on that for several episodes. And I've never seen that, and I actually want to see it now because I watched Erie, Indiana. I love that show. I didn't realize they had another spinoff from it.
I didn't know either. Yeah.
And she was in an episode of Supernatural. So there
just
you go.
One?
She was. we have Jane Eastwood playing Norma, the elderly truck driver. She was in My Big Fat Greek Wedding and its sequel. She was in Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story. Chicago, which you said is your favorite musical or the only one you can tolerate,
it's,
right?
Yeah, it's the only musical that I will watch over and over, and I will seek out to watch it.
The Never Ending Story, she was the voice of one of the Rock Eaters in that. Anything for Jackson, which I have tried so many times to get in that movie. I know that Daphne said that, like, it, you know, it was one of those. Did she actually watch that, or was she just going based on the trailer for it? Because it's got the guy who played Julian, whatever, who plays Death in Supernatural,
as
one of the leads. Try watching it on Shudder sometime. It is such a slow burn. I cannot stand it, and I don't know how you will.
What movie is it again?
Anything for Jackson.
Ooh, okay.
It's basically these two elderly people kidnap this woman who's pregnant so that they can bring back the spirit of their lost child inside of her.
Interesting.
But it ends up that they bring a demon instead.
Nice.
Or that through the aid of a demon. But it takes way too long, gets to the point. It's not my cup of tea. That's all I'm going to say. A lot of people like it, though.
Yeah.
It's high ratings on Shudder. And then she was also in Videodrome. She was a voice of one of the women that were calling into the radio station or something in that movie. So she's been in a few things. Kim Poirier plays Monica, the horny chick in the movie, smoker and friends with Norma. She's seen in a couple scenes where she's getting banged from behind by whatever his name is.
Yeah, with his pants entirely on and her underwear completely on.
Yeah.
Which is,
well, that's movies.
Yeah, I was like, okay. I was like, not even moved to the side underwear. And, oh, look at him. His pants are completely up and zipped. Okay, cool.
Even in the unrated version, which is hilarious.
That's so funny.
She was also in American Psycho 2 All-American Girl with Mila Kunis as the main actress in that, if I remember right. 100 Days of Death, which was a short, and Paradise Falls on TV show. Now, this is one I was talking about earlier. Matt Frewer, who plays Frank, who's Nicole's father. That man can be in a movie for 5 minutes and he stands out more than half the cast.
So
he's got
good.
A look about him.
He does.
He's so good. I didn't put this in here, but the main thing I remember him from is he plays the trash can man on the original The Stand miniseries that came out in the 90s, and he is so fucking good in that part.
Okay.
Like, he plays this psychotic, like, arsonist who ends up working for the bad guy, like his right-hand man. And he plays that psycho character so good in that movie. A lot of people know him from Max Headroom. Like, that was a big thing back in, I mean, it's still meme to this day from back in the 80s. You know, that cyberpunk, like, face that, you know, that I think they even made fun of it a little bit in Back to the Future. Like, whenever he goes to the 1980s cafe or whatever, and they're like, you know, the look that leader of Iran and whatever his name president from back in the 80s. I don't know why I'm blanking us. Reagan.
Okay.
Like, they have that Max Headroom look to them.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like that boxy, like, old CGI look or whatever. Matt Frewer, like, I mean, the man, like, he just has, like, just this look about him that just works. He was also in Watchmen, Hercules. He was the voice of Panic in that. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Fear the Walking Dead, which is hilarious, for 6 episodes. He was the voice of the bishop in Castlevania. That character is fucking psychotic. That animated show.
Yeah.
I think he was like a very sadistic, like, former, like, holy man who got corrupted by Dracula in the TV show and, like, was way out there. Like, I mean, any sexual perversion you could think of, the bishop had it, basically.
Jesus.
Bag of Bones, Stephen King story, Supernatural. He played Pestilence. We just talked about Death. We get Pestilence with Matt Frewer, so.
And he was in 2 episodes, which is the norm for Supernatural, unlike his daughter, who was only in one.
Yeah, who's only in one. Sherlock Holmes TV movies, he did a bunch of those. He was in the sequel to Lawnmower Man, Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace. He was in 1 episode of Erie, Indiana. There's another connection.
Okay.
Which is funny because his daughter was in the sequel.
Yes.
They had a lot of connections for some weird reason.
That's so funny.
And then he's done a ton of voice actor work, but he's got one of those voices that just is out there. Bruce Bond plays Andy, the gun shop owner, and he is the best acting without lines of anybody I've seen in a lot of movies.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You only see Andy for most of the movie, and, like, you get everything from just the way that he carries himself, really. I mean, that's
it.
He was in Fargo, Patch Adams, and Jingle All the Way. We have Blue, who is Chips the dog, gets Best Good Boy.
Yes.
Survived to the end. Oh, Blue did.
Probably further.
Because he was... with all the zombies, I mean, Hannah Lochner plays Vivian. Dead kids are the worst, man. She's that kid at the beginning of the movie that, like, tears into Anna's husband.
Yes.
That kid is freaky. That scene, it got me good whenever it was
okay.
Whenever I first saw
I have to say, in reference to her, in reference to that scene and that character, That was the beginning of the, not only was it the beginning of the movie, it was the beginning of the fucking trailer.
Yes.
It was in the, they showed this in the trailer, which there's a lot to show in the trailer without giving the whole entire fucking movie away. But like, you know how we were just talking about, I hate to bring it up, but Madam Web and how all the best scenes are in the trailer? Well, this is how you do a trailer. You don't, you give away good stuff without giving away fucking everything, you know?
Well, but if you make a good movie that's packed to the gills with good stuff, you can, you don't have to give away everything, unlike Madam Web.
God.
But yeah, she, man, that scene where like her lips are eat away from her face, like, it makes you, because you see her in the scene before that. She's like, she's telling Anna she's learned how to roller skate backwards.
Yes.
So it sets up the relationship between the two of them. But then you see her the next day and you're like, what happened to this poor girl overnight? Her parents had to have attacked her, like, and like ate her lips off her. So did she go to like kiss her parents goodnight and then they ate her lips off? It's just, I mean, you see it and your mind just tries to fill in the blanks of what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Hermes Blairison, a male, although I don't know if they identify that way anymore, because whenever you look them up on IMDb, there is some kind of drag movie that stars this person, plays the bloated woman.
Yes. They're skinny now.
Yes. Ken Forhey is back as the televangelist.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Reiniger plays the general, and Tom Savini plays the county sheriff, who is basically a riff off of the original sheriff from Night of the Living Dead.
And he's hilarious.
He's telling people, he's like, you got to hit them in the head. You got to burn them, you know. Synopsis, a murderous pandemic spreads over the U.S., which causes the dead to become mindless, flesh-eating monsters. A group of survivors take refuge in a local mall as society collapses around them and try to maintain a sense of order and civility. When internal conflicts threaten to doom the ragtag group, they ultimately gamble on the chance of escaping to an island and the safety it may provide. Zombie babies are chomping at the bit to be born. Douchebag yacht owners like their homemade porn. And shooting discount celebrities is the best fun you can have in the apocalypse. How do you kill what's already dead?
Well, you shoot them in the head.
Well, that's a tagline. I'm just throwing it out there. I do love the part that I threw in there about the yacht owners making porn. Like, Steve was notorious for filming his sexual escapade.
That's so funny. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Because even at the camera they found at the end of it, it was him fucking somebody. Yeah. You know?
Oh, my God.
Taglines, other taglines, too terrifying to be shown in cinemas.
That's very...
That's on the unrated version.
Okay, you know, well, and that's out. Very old school. That's very something... That's very, like, almost from the 80s or something like that.
Yeah, sensationalist to kind of get you to, like, oh, God. Based on the original screenplay by George Romero, that's from the Japanese teaser poster. It works. It's just there. Of course, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Yeah.
Just took the one from that's. It's such a good tag. Why wouldn't you choose it? And then, of course, 36 billion people have died since the reign of humanity. For the new dawn, there's a reunion.
I'm good.
That one is.
That's scary.
That one's good, but it's also poorly written because you're like, you have to piece together what they're talking about. They're basically saying that every dead person is going to rise up. And now, you know, which is not true because I don't think every dead person rises.
You have to be
because they established you have to be bit or scratched or whatever.
Ugh, I don't like it.
Quotes. Anna, the bleeding's not going to stop on its own. I need to stitch his arm. CJ, what are you, a fucking doctor? Anna, no, I'm a fucking nurse.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that scene between the two of them.
Yeah.
Michael, so what's the plan? CJ, the plan is you drink a nice tall glass or shut the fuck up.
Very Ben Stiller of him.
Yeah. Ben Stiller in particular, either as playing the guy who is keeping Happy Gilmore's grandma.
Yeah.
Or a Globo Gym guy, you know. Andy, Kenneth is about to leave the mall when he spots Andy on the roof holding the sign. Info, you know, he writes on the in big letters. And then Kenneth writes back, Fort Pastor gone, no help coming. And then my favorite line from Andy, so what's the bad news?
I'm surprised he didn't smile, but that was a tough scene because if you think about it, he was literally trying to leave.
Starving to death.
Well, no, not Andy. Yeah, Andy was starving for sure. That was bad. But... Kenneth was leaving to go to Fort Pastor, but
That is true. Yes,
it was like he had a sudden epiphany that Fort Pastor's gone, and he told him. I think him telling Andy was his way of accepting, I'm not going anywhere. Fort Pastor's gone, and I just need to try to survive.
That's a damn good point. That really is what Kenneth is going through at that moment, because he was trying to get to his brother. He was going to go regardless of them telling them that Fort Pastor had been overrun.
Yeah.
And then he goes up there and he shares that with Andy, and it's just like, okay, I've got to accept my brother's. I can't save him.
Yeah.
It's over. Steve playing Hollywood Squares with Andy. Oh, Rosie O'Donnell, tell him to get Rosie. And then Kenneth's like, oh, yeah, Rosie. And then Tucker's like, no, too easy. Give him something hard. And then Anna responds, you guys really had rough childhoods, didn't you? A little bit rocky. And then Steve's like, hey, sweetheart, let me tell you something. You have my permission. If I ever turn in one of those things, do me a favor and blow my fucking head off. And Anna nods and says, oh, yeah, you can count on that. A lot of animosity there between Anna and Steve.
They're very spicy towards each other. But I also don't understand Anna in this situation because, one, they're getting rid of useless items. Two, they're having fun. That's not something I can imagine myself having a lot of in that situation. And maybe I'd be a little bit more like Anna. Maybe she's also just kind of trying to poke humor at them, but she's a little uptight, you know?
Well, she's giving them a little bit of black humor because it's all like black humor with them because, I mean, they're literally shooting people that look like, you know, knockoff celebrities. But you got to have something. I mean, you're going to lose your fucking mind.
Which,
you know, one way or the other.
Skinny Burt Reynolds did make his he made a little cameo in this. I wonder if his boots were squishy. Maybe not from the Vaseline, but from his own decaying body.
Probably. That's gross. I want to go ahead and say, too, that I really like the relationship that develops between Anna and Michael. I believe that it's very natural. It's very subtle throughout the movie. I think they do a pretty good job of selling that between the two of them.
Yeah.
Televangelist, hell is overflowing and Satan is sending his dead to us. Why? Because you have sex out of wedlock. By the way, I'm going to point this out as we go along. Sex out of wedlock is, Mekhi Phifer's character and then, you know, his girlfriend. You kill unborn children. the zombie baby.
Yeah.
You have man-on-man relations, Glenn.
Okay.
Or whatever his name is. Same-sex marriage. How do you think your God will judge you? Well, friends, now we know that when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. Ken Forey gets to deliver that great line again.
Yeah. With Steve, almost the same music in the background.
Yes. By the way, the music when they get into Andy's is the same music that's in the gun shop in the original movie. It's that African chanting music.
Oh,
you can
barely hear it,
but it's the same.
I didn't catch the song at the beginning. You know what? Let's talk about music when we get to music. Sorry. Let's move forward.
Steve, I have an idea. While we're at it, why don't we drop by the marina, hop in my boat, and take it for a pleasure cruise, you jackasses? And then Anna's like, wait, that's a good idea. There's islands out there. There's not many people on them. And Steve was like, I was kidding. And CJ's like, excuse me, not to shit on anyone's riff here, but let me see if I grasp this concept, okay? You're suggesting that we take some fucking parking shuttles, reinforce them with some aluminum siding, and then just head on over to the gun store where we watch our good friend Andy play some cowboy movie, jump on the covered wagon bullshit. Then we're going to drive across the ruined city through a welcome committee of a few hundred thousand dead cannibals. Also, we could sail off into the sunset on some fucking asshole's boat. And then he points to Steve. CJ's like, head for some island that we all know doesn't even exist. And then Kenneth's like, yep. Tucker's like, pretty much, yeah. And Anna nods. Michael's like, yeah. And then Steve gives a sarcastic thumbs up. And CJ's like, okay, I'm in. I love that old back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
It's perfect, too, because he's laying out exactly what the fuck they're going to have to deal with. Like, I mean, just going back to what you said, he's very down to earth and, like, understands the threats, you know, that are going on. And, of course, the county sheriff. I keep telling my men to shoot these things in the head. Head dead. Anywhere else, those things just twitch. Boy, we sure got a lot of them today. What's troubling is that I know some of these people we're putting down. What can you do? It's got to be done, you know?
He's not wrong. If it's hard for him and he looks like he's enjoying doing it, that's saying, like, I know that if it's hard for that guy, it's going to be hard for me, but it has to be done.
Yeah, and that's whenever CJ or one of them, it might be his second command, basically says, that guy's a badass, you know, and I'm like, yeah, he pretty much is. Visually, we've already mentioned this. The zombies look amazing.
Oh,
the gore is out the roof in this movie.
The veins, the eyes, the pale skin, or the gray skin. This was gray skin done right.
Yeah, it's got a greenish look at times too, especially like the fat woman.
Oh yeah,
which me and you joked about off the you know on Discord, but that bitch had never ran in a day in her life until she died. Mm-hmm. We'll just go throw that out there. And what was it you said back to me?
Nothing ever ran in her family besides diabetes.
I can buy some of those other people running, but like any game that has fat zombies, they're very slow.
Yeah.
They're very durable. They take a lot more shots to put down, but they don't move that quick. They're actually slower than the regular zombies.
Yeah.
The fact that she ran that quick is kind of laughable, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But there is not, I mean, even and this is actually in the trivia, they actually had a blackout for real on the set. Whenever they had the blackout in the movie and they just rolled with it and made it part of the movie, set up. But those scenes are so well done where it's dark, like you're mm-hmm. freaking out along with the main characters. It's like, we shouldn't be down here. There's fucking shit moving.
Wait. So with them going downstairs to hit the thing, that wasn't supposed to happen?
If it was, it was a happy coincidence.
Yes.
Because they legit lost their electricity during the filming, and they put that into it.
That shit would scare the fuck out of me. And I know, you know, what's funny about that is that it's not just the four or five of them in there, or however many. There's literally a whole cast and crew around them. There's the fucking, what do they call it when you have catering services? They got the food. They got all that.
Services,
yeah. And they have the costuming. They have the makeup. Everybody is on set nearby, and I'd be like, like.
Of course, the cameras had backups. I mean, they always keep batteries and stuff for them.
Yeah,
but, you know.
That's so funny.
But I say all that to say that, you know, typically in a movie, if it's a bad movie, they either do day for night shots, which are clearly obvious. They just turn down the color scheme, but you can tell it's during the daylight.
Yeah,
or they are a very poorly shot, like independent or shot on video movie, where if it's filmed in the black or of dark, you don't see shit. But
yeah.
In this movie, you can still see just like they can, and barely. And that's what amps up the nervousness that just more, you know?
Yeah. I think they did a really good job. I'm sure you'll go into detail about the details of the mall, but I think the mall looked amazing. It looked very new in comparison. It felt safe. I loved the coffee shop in the middle of the mall called Hallowed Grounds.
It was the Crossroads Mall on top of that.
Oh, yes. Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that, which is obviously it's fucking everywhere. It's on the vans.
The truck that was drove into the mall had BP on it, which is the same trucking company that Peter and Roger drive the trucks, the semis to block the original mall in 1978.
Well, BP's real popular out here in California, specifically in our area. We have a whole fucking BP trucking fucking service. So it's kind of weird to see that because I've always seen, I know where the warehouse is where they store all of them. So it's kind of weird to see that on TV, you know?
And the department store was called Galen Ross. Throwback to the actress for Fran.
I didn't even think about that. That's hella funny.
So anyways, there's a lot of that in the movie, but I agree with you. The mall looked like perfect mm-hmm. the way that they filmed it.
They definitely kept it updated and everything, so.
The funny thing about that is that mall was abandoned. They actually built all that stuff in there.
Okay, that makes sense because I'm like, how did they? There's no way they built a whole ass set. So, you know, I'm like, how did they get the mall? And they only use like the same five, literally a handful of stores. And their definite meetup spot was the fucking, you know, Hallowed Grounds.
Hallowed Grounds, yeah.
Which I love.
Which makes sense because, I mean, it's the sacred space.
It is.
I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. So I think it was smart that if you're going to use a mall that's abandoned and you're going to rebuild certain areas of it or make it look more updated, that you only use X amount of space so that you don't, I don't know. So you're not, because it doesn't show them walking around the mall. You don't see a ton of things. You really only see what you see. It's very minimal. So I think they did a good job, and that probably helped with the budget too.
Oh, speaking of that, the reason that they did all that and naming their own individual places, which I still love because they had such good names for them, is because they tried to get Starbucks. They tried to get some of these other companies. And whenever they found out what type of movie they were making, they're like, we don't want our brand associated with this sort of nonsense.
Y'all are crazy. You are crazy. Like, Metropolis, was that the sports store?
Yes.
That was definitely Champ Sporting Goods.
Speaking of which, it's funny that Metropolis is the name of the movie because both the director and the writer have went on to make Superman movies.
Yeah. Metropolis was like definitely, what's the word I'm looking for? It was Champ Sporting Goods. The baby store. I mean, the baby store was definitely unique.
It looked like Babies R Us or something like that, or a Toys R Us knockoff or something.
Hallowed Grounds looked like its own place. If anything, Hallowed Grounds looked like Pete's Coffee.
We got one that's pretty close to us. It's like a family-owned business that's similar to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Actually, we have several Christian-themed ones that are funny because their names are very similar to Hallowed Grounds.
Oh, that's
like
so funny.
Sacred Grounds or what, you know, it's the same kind of thing.
Love that. So, yeah, I think they did a good job.
Well, and the only effects that are cheesy when you go back and watch them now, even in 4K, is some of the fire, like some of the CGI fire that you see, and in particular, when CJ's on the roof and he's trying to give him cover with Andy's sniper rifle, there, and he shoots the one one of the propane tanks from up there, the fire that comes up in front of him, it looks just a little too, I hate to say the word ephemeral, but it's too translucent. It doesn't look like real fire.
Okay.
The rest of the fire, that especially whenever they throw the one out in front of the trucks, looks pretty good. It's just that one scene that kind of stood out.
I'm going to be real honest with you. I didn't notice, so it was minimal.
It's totally nitpick. It's totally nitpick.
And that's fine. That's what we're here to do. And we're not here to nitpick, but we are here to notice things. And so I think it's good that at least you noticed it. Obviously, I'm here for a good time. So, yeah.
The story is pretty much the same as the original. They did add in the fact of them, instead of them trying to fly away because they don't have access to any planes, they get on a boat. Not a bad idea. I mean, it makes sense.
Well, you had
a less populated island.
Yeah, you had both of these in the movies. You had a boat in the original movie, and then you had some that chose to be on the boat and some that choose to be on the helicopter. In this movie, the helicopter was not an option, but the boat was.
Which, speaking of that, the WGON helicopter is shown in the first 10 minutes of the movie whenever they go to the wide shot. And in that same scene, when Anna is driving, there is a gas truck that runs into a diner and blows up, which matches exactly the story that Ben tells in Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, shit. I love that so much. I mean, come on. We got George A. Romero technically involved to a degree, so you are able to use details like that. Can we give mad props to that fucking Corolla that she was in? That, you know, that thing's gonna start every time you get into it. That thing was older than Christ, okay? That thing was a zombie.
Which made sense because she was a nurse, and let's face it, they don't make a lot of money. So,
not anymore, no, but she's in a reliable-ass vehicle. And not only that, she was safe when she got out of that car. She barely was bumped up.
That one seems pretty freaky with the police officer, which I don't know if he's dead or alive, tries to break into the car and whip her out of it.
That looked
like
some kind of, I didn't know that was a police officer. It looked like a security to me or EMT.
Well, he could have been, but he had on SWAT-like gear that made, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to tell, but usually they look deader than that, so.
The scenes leading into that's creepy because she stopped behind the bus. The one woman who's completely nude is walking away like she's in shock.
Yeah.
Like Barbara in the first movie. And then she sees in the back of the bus these women that are like some kind of women's correctional facility or something, are ripping each other apart.
Like, oh, yeah.
Or ripping a woman apart. It's a well-done scene.
Oh, 100%. There's so much going on. She has no idea. I'm surprised that she's the only one leaving out of town. That was an impressive aerial view.
It was, and the only people you see heading to the direction that she was from are military people, which I read is actually a sign that Fort whatever the name of it is was actually overrun because they were bringing their military men who had been bitten into the city to be treated.
Oh shit!
That's what that was symbolizing.
Ugh, that sucks.
But the story, I mean, it, you can say that it's basic, but they work very well within that limit because they've got the mall. They don't do anything goofy. This movie does not let up. Mm-mm. I mean, at all. There's the jokey part is the dark humor of them shooting the celebrities. I mean, yes. That's really the humor in it. And it's well done because it gives you a humorous moment to kind of, well, along with the music, like let's give props to, you know, this skips ahead to the music a little bit. But Richard Cheese singing Down with the Sickness.
Oh, God.
I mean,
that was so good.
It's needed, though, because you were so, I mean, I remember when I first watched this in the theater, your nerves are so shot by the time that they give you that little bit of humor that if they didn't give that to you, you wouldn't be able to make it the rest of the movie and have any feeling from it.
Oh, yeah.
They give you just enough to pull you back and give you a breather, and then they fucking punch you in the throat again.
Oh, yeah. Like, hey, how you feeling? Good? Well, how about now? Puh!
But they have a lot of good scenes between the characters, which is what you need in a movie like this. I mean, you get Michael and Anna becoming closer. You get to see a little bit of CJ and Monica, and they're just all about the world's ending. We're just going to fuck. I mean, hey, that's not a bad way to look at it. If that's what you want to do. You get to see the really good scene between Nicole and her dad, you know, Frank, who's got to be put down. The zombie baby. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens. So the acting, pretty good. There's a few of the people that they bring in the middle of the movie. Norma's okay. She serves her part.
Yeah.
The fat zombie woman. I mean, but whatever. Tucker is all right. He's probably the weakest, in my opinion, outside. Well, I say that outside. There's one or two of the security guys because they blend in, so they're really not that standout. But, like, Tucker, the kind of the redneck that joins them that survives, well, until he gets ripped apart in the sewers.
Yeah.
He's just okay.
Yeah.
The main three are awesome, though.
I mean, definitely.
Michael, Anna, and Kenneth. And then Andy, Steve even adds to his part. I don't really have a problem with acting at all in this movie.
No, I didn't have any issues with anybody. I think everyone served exactly what they were supposed to do, which is what they did in this film. And I don't know what they were designed to do, but if they did anything wrong, I didn't notice. So
even Chips. Chips the good boy.
Yeah, best good boy. And it was funny because my husband was like, oh, how's he going to know where to go without food? You know, obviously there's a scene in the movie where he's got a pack of food and probably other supplies. Yeah. And I'm like, first off, he's some kind of he's not a border collie, but he's some kind of, not retriever. He's definitely a working dog. I go and watch. There's got to be something that he can do, a noise that he's going to make. And immediately he blows a whistle and you just see the dog like, oh, that's where I'm going.
Makes you wonder if he was maybe like a support animal that was for somebody who was caught in the mall, like, you know, underneath. Maybe he was their support animal, and that's why he was still there.
He absolutely could have been, yeah. Which
explains why he was so easily trained, because he was already used to being, you know, trained.
Yeah, they're cattle dogs of some sort. And they're just super fucking smart. So even if he had not been trained, it would not have taken much.
Now, two things that I got to bring up before we get into the music and round out the movie review. They're nitpicks, but we got to mention them because we brought them up earlier and I never thought about why Luda is able to survive her zombie scratch / bite longer than anybody else in the movie by a long shot. And why Andy has a dog door built into his, to his barricade anyways, because it's like, okay, they don't set it up in the movie right for it to make like that he, how do I phrase this? That give him enough time to know that that's what the plan was going to be. It was just like, we're going to do this. And then like the next day they do it. Well, obviously he had a sliding dog door built way before the zombie. So did he do that with the intention that he could easily slide in and out and it would limit the ability for them to come in? It's a little odd that he would build it specifically, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I just knew that it was there. We don't know the story. Clearly did not work out very well.
No, because he wasn't able to put, because it didn't drop back immediately. It didn't have enough weight to keep them from just holding it open and then running in.
Yeah, so. They just started piling in. As for, yeah, because I was doing some math today, death math, if you will, and we have found from my, findings, from what I was studying, is that from death, specifically when you die from a bite or having been bitten, well, the infection spreads. Google said that you die within 24 hours, which Luda did not. But when you
die... Most of them die within 6 hours in the movie,
yeah.
Honestly.
Oh, but. Really fast. Yeah, because she was saying, what's her name, was saying that, oh, I can't believe how fast this infection is spreading. I've never seen anything like it. And not only that, they don't get a fever. In fact, they go cold.
Yes.
The opposite. But you, from the time you die, within 30 seconds, you are rising and becoming a zombie. The highest, the longest one, I believe, was 25 seconds. The shortest was 10 seconds, that being the first one, which was, what's her name's husband at the very beginning?
Anna's husband,
Anna's husband, yes. So let me see. I was sending the results to you of my findings, and
that lady was the longest, right, at like 25 seconds.
Yeah, she was 25 seconds, so I didn't get to do all of them, but let me say here. Okay, so 10 seconds was what's her name's husband, Anna's husband. The fat lady was 25 seconds, and then Luda, she was, hold on, Luda was 20 seconds. Oh, no, 20 seconds for the girl's dad, sorry. And then Luda was the most at exactly 30 seconds. In fact, I want to say 29 seconds. I don't know that I rounded up to 30 seconds. I was literally, it was so ghetto. I was counting 1,000, 2,000. I could have literally hit a timer on my watch or my phone, but I was doing the 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 1,000. And Luda was the highest at 30 seconds.
And the raising back, that's one thing. You can argue whatever you want to on that. But the time between bite and death is so drastically skewed out of whack for her versus everybody else in the movie that it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you can argue it's plot armor, and that's what I would put it down to. It's like, why does she survive it long? Because you want to draw out the drama of it. Fine.
Yeah.
But I've heard people try to make comments on why they thought that scientifically something about her body, her pregnancy,
that's what I
like
was thinking.
The zombie virus attacked the child instead of her, and it just took longer. And once the child died, then it spread through the umbilical cord to her, is what some people have argued. I don't know if you want to argue that, fine. James Gunn has went out the opposite way, and he said, hey, this is not actually a virus or a bacterial or anything like that. It's supernatural. It's like a vampire's bite. There's no rhyme or reason why it turns you into what it does or when. It's just a supernatural origin. That's his excuse.
It happens when it happens. You know what's funny is that being that this is the, 80th time that I've watched this film, it's one of those films for me. I just decided, I was thinking of World War Z today and how in the film you have what is that machine called that the kid was playing? It sounded like one of those machines from back in the 80s that would count. You know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about like a metronome or something?
No,
or?
It was like a little, it was like, it would do ABCs, but it sounded like A, B, C.
Oh, speak and spell.
Speak and spell. One of those was counting in World War Z. And what was it, 15 seconds for those zombies?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's what made me count this one. I was like, wait.
Well, I guess. I don't know. I've not seen it. So we're going to have some fun on that one because I refuse to watch that one because the book is so good.
Okay.
And the movie looks like hot trash to me with the CGI zombies that look in scenes worse than I Am Legend. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It'll be a rewatch for me. I think I've only seen it once or twice. To me, the story's captivating. I don't think I've read the book. I think my husband read the book.
The book's amazing, but it's not like a one continuous story. It's a bunch of vignettes,
And that,
which is what makes it good.
You'll get a little bit of that with World War Z.
Okay.
So
there's a whole scene in the book where they talk about how some people in the Midwest started using rat terriers to get zombies out of like certain like tunnels and stuff, because that's what rat terriers were designed to do anyways, is to burrow in the holes and get rodents out. So they just used them as their natural inclination to ferret out the zombies, basically, that were, like, underneath, like, things, you know, so they wouldn't surprise people later.
Yeah, I don't remember if that was a thing or not in that movie, but it was, it did have multiple stories. I was able to follow, which is hard for me to do with multiple stories. A lot of bouncing, still able to follow. I think you'll like it. But I wanted to ask with it, I think on World War Z it was 15 seconds. Again, I have to rewatch it to be sure. Was there any indication in the book how long it took for them to turn?
I don't remember that being like a major factor because they it was more about the drama of the people. Like one scene in particular that I loved in the book is that they have a character who's clearly not what's his name? Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly not Bill Maher. And one who's clearly not Ann Coulter. And the two of them are at a party in Hollywood when the zombies attack and they get trapped together. And the two of them basically hate fuck each other after being in confined spaces for so long because they're diametrically opposed politically. And all they can do is bitch at each other. And then they're eventually like, fuck it. Let's go at it. We've always been attracted to each other. We just never admitted
it. What the hell?
And the fact they had Bill Maher fucking Ann Coulter, it was perfect. I was like, that makes sense.
Also, in World War Z, when I say, oh, it takes this long for them to turn, that was in the preview, by the way, so, or the trailer. I'm not spoiling anything, so anyone wants to come at me, come at me. Don't watch the trailer.
There is a tabletop RPG which has like a very good story for how the zombie apocalypse could reasonably happen, and then nobody would be prepared to deal with it. It's a Palladium Games RPG, but basically everybody contracted the virus. It wasn't immediately deadly, but it put people into comas, basically. A huge population amount got, like, 90-some percent got affected. So, like, all of the military and all that, they were housing the comatose people for up to a week. And, like, you know, wherever they were at, hospitals, military zones, all that. When the people died on the seventh day, they rose back up immediately in mass as zombies, attacked the people that were around them, basically wiping out all first responders, military, all of that. And now the people who are left, have to deal with the fact that the entire population became zombies in like one day, basically. Jesus.
And not only that, they have to learn basic skills, not even basic, more than basic skills to fucking survive.
Yeah, because, they weren't nurses or anything because they all got killed, like, when the first attack happened.
Damn.
That's a reasonable explanation for how zombies could take over, for sure. But anyways, getting back to this movie, the music in this movie, Zack Snyder is amazing at selecting music. Every song in this, like, fits perfectly. Mm-hmm. That prison thing that we talked about where you get, like, goosebumps from, like, if you can't get goosebumps at the beginning of this movie, when they start playing Johnny Cash, when the man comes around, over top of the opening credits, you are dead inside because that is so perfectly done.
Yeah.
I don't know of another way to explain it. I mean, because they're showing all these, and those are real images, by the way. That truck driving into people, that is a real thing. That's a real news footage that wasn't made for the movie. They took a real truck running over people.
Oh shit.
That was really filmed and cut it into the movie.
God damn. Okay, so I wasn't paying attention to the music at that particular time, so I don't remember that particular part of the song or the music. I don't know how, because I've seen this movie so many times. And so I'm not going to agree or disagree. I don't think I could find any reason
to
disagree.
The song's about the apocalypse. It's Johnny Cash basically singing about the biblical apocalypse. He's talking about there's going to be pestilence, there's going to be war.
Yes.
And you better have the priorities straight when the man, meaning God, comes around, you know.
What song got me at the beginning was a song called Have a Nice Day. Right at the beginning, we're talking about black screen to showing shit going on. And I was like, what the hell? That is morbidly dark, considering what we're in for. Johnny Cash.
Oh, there's one that's even more dark than that. Whenever Nicole loses her father, and she's down in like some subsection of the mall painting like this dark mural over everything. Mm-hmm. There's a song playing called "The Hangman's Noose" or something like that, I think.
Oh God!
Or it's either during that scene or whenever they're getting ready to do the trucks or whatever. But it's basically the song is about like the rope tightening around the neck, how you're going to, you know, you're going to die soon. It's like basically foreshadowing what's happening in the movie.
The movie did good by sticking true to mall music. I thought it was hilarious that when they walked in, there was an elevator version of Don't Worry, Be Happy playing.
Don't Worry, Be Happy. Whenever they get in the elevator later on, after they barely escaped the zombies that have broke in through the sewer or whatever, they hop in there and CJ says, I love this song. The song that's playing is Air Supplies.
I'm all out of love.
I'm so lost without you.
Yes. You Light Up My Life is another elevator song that or mall song that was playing, because this was all instrumental only. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Another instrumental version of the song. There's the Hangman song that you were talking about. All Out of Love, which we talked about. I'm trying to see if there's any other. But anyways, yeah, in terms of those, like I said, instrumental music, I'm All Out of Love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Don't Worry, Be Happy. That shit was fucking hilarious. Not appropriate for this movie at all, but worked so well.
And then, of course, Richard Cheese is Down with the Sickness.
Down with the Sickness, yes.
And then they play the real Down with the Sickness at the end of it, whenever the zombies or the quick cuts of whenever one of the characters, I can't remember his name, whichever small security guard turned to the good guys EJ? First or whatever, and he's with Nicole, he picks up Steve's old camera, and then they're, like, filming, and then they have, like, the scenes where, you know, like, they get to the island, and it just starts playing Down with the Sickness, and it's perfect, you know?
Yeah, that is, you thought that you got a chance to wind down a little bit, like, you knew they were in trouble, they were running out of water, they're running out of gas, like, they show all this, obviously, with that camera and everything, but then you see the horde come after them. As soon as they make it to the island, they don't have a way to get out of there.
Like, no, they're fucked. There's no way that they can do anything.
It's basically, are we fighting? What are we doing at this point? That's some fucked up shit, because with both movies, this one and the original, you really don't know what happens to them.
No, it's, I mean, you can go whichever route you want to go and assume that they made it out if you want to do that. But the movie, this one in particular, definitely sets it up to where it is not, you know, like, it looks like they're going to all be dead. Like, there's no real hope for them, because the zombies are moving in too quick. There's too many of them. I don't know how that they were going to make it out.
Yeah, even if they were able to push themselves back off the dock, whoever was left in the boat, because I don't know that everybody got off, but whoever was left in the boat, even if they push themselves off, there's still going to be zombies that are going to be able to, like, make it into the water. Zombies can't swim. I think we all know that, but
yeah, they sink to the bottom of the ocean and fight sharks, which is what we learn in Fulci's zombie movie. But
God. But yeah, no, there's going to be some that are able to hang on the boat and cause some fucking trouble. And the people, okay, are you rowing the boat out of the way, or are you hitting zombies to get off the boat? I mean, like, there's no way.
That reminds me, going back to BioZombie, which was the Tag of the Bees that I was talking about. The end of the movie is the darkest of all of these movies. It really is, because only two people make it out of the mall, Rolls and the main character, Woody. They stop at a gas station because they're about out of gas. He goes up to the door. There's nobody around. It's dead quiet. He hears on the radio or the TV, they talk about how there's emergency broadcast, barricade your homes, meaning it's spread beyond the mall, that the biological agent was in the energy drinks. He looks back at the car whenever he sees that. The energy drink that they gave the original zombie that was only half drunk.
Uh-huh.
Rolls has decided to drink out of it. So she's already drunk by the time whenever he looks around and looks at her, she's already drinking it. So he thinks for a second, and he goes back to the car and he takes the last swig out of it. And that's how the movie ends.
Oh shit.
There's no hope in that movie.
No. And like I said, take me out to look at the flowers.
But anyways, the music in this is amazing. Like, it every one of them is a perfect fit, either for levity or for making the movie darker.
Levity at minimum. It's gonna be bare minimum for levity. Let's be honest.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Oh, why, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up, the demons.